Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game to see the Tide roll.
You know, we knew they were going to make it. And out of nowhere, number 95, Thomas Raham, blocks that kick. And I mean, I can still hear the sound, the two thumps. One was the kick, and the one was his hand blocking that kick. And of course, the Alabama fans went crazy.
Put yourself in the action with Ticket City. Visit Tidesports.com and click tickets.
The Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and Tidesports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by Mobley & Sons. Mobley & Sons in Tuscaloosa has an unmatched selection of men's clothing combined with superior customer service. Mobley & Sons has served as a fine men's clothier since 1969. Come see us, and we'll get you looking good for the big game. Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones, and we put the Tide Sports staff back together. It feels like it's been a little while since we've all been assembled here in the podcast room together. Has it been? Am I just making that up?
I think 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
That's a while for us. Yeah.
The band is back together.
That's Taryn Walk. you can also hear Cecil Hurt there. We're going to be talking today, now that Alabama's coaching changes are all official. We have titles. We have new coaches introduced. Everything is settled. So we're going to be talking one more time this offseason about Alabama's coaching change. We're going to give you five key points or five takeaways from Alabama's new coaching staff as we get into this.
And then we're done, I swear. I'm done.
Assuming there's not any more coaching changes, you know.
But that, Alabama's done, I'm done, we're all done.
At that point, they'll be in spring practice and we can...
Yeah.
Oh, don't say those words.
We're really like just about a month away from spring practice, you know. Yeah. Depends whether they decide to have one day before spring break like they had in some years. Or I think last year they did not have any time before spring break.
With a relatively early A-Day, I would think that they would do that.
Have a day before...
Yeah, because A-Day is usually around the 20th, and it's the 13th this year. So,
Okay. In any event, Alabama's new football coaches on staff. Does somebody have a list of the new coaches here? Should we bring this up?
I did.
I've got it here. So in case you've been living under a rock as this news slowly trickled out over the last month or so and then burst out all at once on Friday – Steve Sarkisian arrives from the Atlanta Falcons. He's the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. Charles Huff, previously of Mississippi State, before that of Penn State, is the running back's coach. Holman Wiggins arrives from Virginia Tech to coach the wide receivers. Jeff Banks remains tight ends coach and special teams coordinator. Kyle Flood, previously of the Atlanta Falcons, replaces Brent Key at offensive line. Pete Golding is going to stay with the inside linebackers, but he's also picking up the defensive coordinator title for the season. Not a co-coordinator title as he had last season. He is the defensive coordinator. Brian Baker, also from Mississippi State, along with Charles Huff, arrives to coach the defensive line. He'd spent a lot of time in the NFL before spending, I believe, the last 3 years over there in Starkville. Was, I think, the only holdover on Joe Moorhead's staff when he arrived to take over for Dan Mullen, unless I'm wrong. Sal Cenceri, back for his second tour of duty with Alabama. It'll be his third year on staff coaching the outside linebackers, although it'll be his first year. His son, Vinny Cenceri, is going to be a defensive graduate assistant. Carl Scott remains on staff. He was the secondary coach last year. This year he's going to be the cornerbacks coach. That's because Charles Kelly, who had been at Tennessee on Jeremy Pruitt's staff and before that been defensive coordinator at Florida State, is now the safeties coach. They've split up the two positions in the secondary.
So the one guy who's not on that list of 10 guys is Butch Jones. And Butch is, well, that doesn't mean he's not around. He's like...
Is he extending? Here's our
weekly... Taryn, have you seen this? Have you seen Ghostbusters?
You haven't seen Ghostbusters?
I've seen the new one.
Oh.
The remake. And then the one with the women. I don't even know if there's a remake. Maybe I've just seen the one with the women.
There's an original.
That Ben has seen, that many of our listeners have seen.
And, Disappointment Monday.
And Butch is like, you know, Ernie Hudson in Ghostbusters. I mean, he was a Ghostbuster.
The black guy.
Yeah, the black guy. which I only say because they say the same thing. Or actually, Rosie Perez says it in White Men Can't Jump. She goes on a long diatribe about how they didn't give him enough to do. But that's Butch's – that's kind of you know, he drives the Ghostmobile and he's there, but you don't really – is he a Ghostbuster? Is he not a Ghostbuster? That's Butch's role, kind of. Kind of do it all.
Yeah.
I think he'll have the same title he had last year.
Intern slash analyst.
I guess. Yeah. And some of that may be financially related to his severance from Tennessee.
As a slight aside, I wonder if Nick Saban ever regrets accidentally saying intern, because he refers to most of those guys as being analysts. And yet the first time he mentioned Butch Jones, he said he's an intern, he's an analyst, and people just seized upon the word intern because he's Butch Jones, and Butch Jones had become enough of a punching bag on social media that if you could call Butch Jones an intern and imagine him getting coffee and dry cleaning, then that's what people were going
to
do.
You went from a head coach to an intern.
But I think Butch actually did a lot last year, just as I'm sure Ernie Hudson did a lot for the Ghostbusters.
He's probably happy to be out of the limelight a little bit, and I'm sure that he's still collecting the nice severance package from Tennessee as he's doing. He obviously also had opportunities to go elsewhere. Like he was gone to Maryland at one point and chose to come back to Alabama, so presumably he either feels like he's going to have a better opportunity or just didn't feel as though that was the right fit, something like that, you know. With whatever he's receiving from Tennessee, he probably didn't feel that he needed to rush back into a position. And plenty of folks have been at Alabama and spent a couple of years doing what he's doing and ended up with very nice jobs.
So. Anyway, just wanted – people do ask about him and why he wasn't on the list. And I think it's because he didn't change. So.
Yeah. That's a bonus on top of our five takeaways. Sure. Yeah. First observation, one that I thought of here. Last year, there were six offensive coaches and four defensive coaches because you had Mike Locksley, who was the offensive coordinator, and Dan Enos, who was the quarterback's coach. Those two responsibilities were separated. This year, you're going to have five offensive coaches and five defensive coaches, although I think it's pretty safe to say Nick Saban has always spent more time with the defense. So really this kind of tilts things in favor of the defense. If last year it had been six offensive and five defensive coaches with Saban spending more time on defense, now you have five offensive and six defensive guys, which I think will be interesting. And maybe as a response to what he saw with some of the performance of the defense last year.
Probably has a good bit to do with it. I think that was an area of concern, particularly down the stretch of the season. And I think it's possible that Nick wants to devote more of his time to it, and he also wants more coaches devoting their time to it. And it might be he's got three former head coaches on offense, if you count Butch, Sark and Kyle Flood, both former head coaches too. So maybe he feels like they can handle it.
Yeah.
The fact that there's no quarterbacks coach is also interesting because that was the first time last year in a long time. I can't remember the exact date, but I know I had written it in a story. It's like early 2000s, maybe 2003. I don't know why that number sticks, but maybe it just didn't work out as well as they had hoped having a quarterbacks coach along with an offensive coordinator. I mean, that's a lot of input.
It was the only time in Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama he'd separated offensive coordinator and quarterbacks. I would be hard-pressed to say that they were not happy with how it worked out offensively, considering they had probably the best offense they've ever had in school history here last year, and a large part of that was because the quarterbacks played so well. But
maybe it was deemed not worth an extra coach.
Yeah, I think that the trade-off might have been if you had one fewer guy on defense, he wasn't willing to give up the performance that he saw on defense last year to have that kind of an offense.
And the quarterbacks liked it.
And he thinks Sark can handle it. You know, it's probably a part of it, too.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a perfect time for me to do my little thing that I stole from Twitter.
Baby Sark.
Baby Sark, do-do-do-do-do-do. Baby Sark, do-do-do-do-do-do.
Okay. Thank you, Tara.
You're welcome.
My second point here is almost kind of a corollary to the first point. It kind of goes in line with it. This is going to be the first time in Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama that he has split up the secondary coaching responsibilities, with Charles Kelly coaching the safeties and Carl Scott coaching the cornerbacks.
And then add him into that mix.
Yeah. And potentially Vinny Sinceri as well as a defensive graduate assistant. When I thought of that, I thought, well, you know, sometimes there are some hidden numbers or parts of this formula that we don't necessarily see. And one of those might be where you assign your GA. I think last year they had – you're allowed four GAs on staff. I know last year they had one with the defensive line, and I think they had another one with the secondary. But if you have one on the defensive line and then one with the linebackers, then maybe it makes more sense. You just want somebody with more eyeballs in the secondary. You could probably have Vinny Sinceri with – inside linebackers or outside linebackers. He's learning how to coach.
Or special teams. Vinny could do special teams.
Yeah, graduate assistants often have a lot of responsibilities on special teams.
Isn't there another Sinceri joining?
Sal Sinceri, his father, yes.
No, there's a third.
Vinny Sinceri?
Is
Tino coming?
Is Tino? He might be.
Maybe.
It's not official, but I remember someone be like, the whole fam is together.
Maybe. Yeah. In any event, you know, depending on whether they decide to have a GA working with the secondary next year, you could have Nick Saban, Charles Kelly, Carl Scott, and a GA all with the secondary. That's a lot of attention.
That's a lot of coaching for some guys.
You better not screw up.
Yeah.
So, and it'll be an interesting unit if Trayvon Diggs comes back healthy. They'll have Diggs and Surtain, who are probably potential first-rounders when their time comes.
Yeah.
But they've got some freshmen that they're counting on, too.
Yeah. Other staffs, it's not that unusual to split up the coaching in the secondary, safety and corners like this. You know, it's a position that has probably grown in importance a little bit more. Alabama just has never done it like this. You know, you'd have to look and actually chart the plays. I might guess that Alabama's in its dime package with six defensive backs on the field as much as it's in its base package with seven guys in the defensive front, you know, three down linemen and four linebackers, in which case, you know, you've got two coaches there working with six guys instead of two coaches working with four guys as it might have been 10 or 15 years ago, which might be a part of this.
That's a good point. And, again, maybe in the back of his mind or in the front of his mind, Nick is thinking that he's going to devote more total team time and more – individual time to guys at other positions. He's
well.
Kind of mentioned that, or at least hinted at that. Now, whether that comes to fruition, I think once the pads go on and practice starts, he'll be back there. I think he.
How strange would it be for us to be out there for the 10 open minutes of practice and have him not throwing passes to the DBs?
Yeah, have him coaching the offensive line.
Oh, my gosh.
Even just, like, you know, working with the linebackers or something like that. You know,
I'd be, like, waving, like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you lost?
The whole foundation of his coaching career was built on coaching defensive backs and starting off doing that.
You can tell, even in our limited practice, you can tell he enjoys it.
Yeah. I think he likes coaching guys on an individual level like that as much as he likes running a program and doing the big picture kind
of
stuff.
It makes him feel young again.
Maybe, yeah.
But Tino Sinceri is going to be a graduate assistant, and he's doing quarterbacks, according to his Twitter.
So they've got,
all right.
There's three Sinceris.
Sonny, Michael, and Fredo all coming back.
Sonny Sinceri.
I mean, really, I feel like, you know, if Sal's on staff, then we have Don Corleone.
Don.
So I guess the quarterbacks are getting someone specific.
Mm-hmm. Does one of you guys want to share one of your points, or should I just move along?
Just move along. That's okay. Good.
Like the All-American Rejects once said.
Yeah. There you go.
I had a reference.
Number three, there is now no assistant coach going 2019 who is on staff for 2017. The entire staff has turned over in the span of two off seasons.
That sucks. Just kidding.
Technically, Sark was on the 2017.
Oh. No, he was on the 2016 staff.
2016, okay.
Yeah, he was going to be on the 2017
right.
staff, but
That's
he left
right.
after
That's
2016,
right.
yeah.
Was the game technically right. in 2017?
Yeah, but I'm not going to get into. I'm not going to get into calendar years.
Yeah.
That screws everything up.
Yeah. I think it was New Year's Eve.
Right.
Now, this is kind of an interesting point because I went and I charted how many coaching staff changes there were during Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama here, and for the most part, you had a pretty consistent two or three changes a year, which is about in line with what you see a lot of other schools. Then you had, I believe it was after the 2016 season, there were five changes. Part of that was, you know, Lane Kiffin moving on and taking some guys with him, and that was, you just saw a lot of shifts kind of there. But the last 2 years have been a much more substantial change than that. You had nine guys who were either new coaches or in new positions last year. Six new coaches, three guys who changed their responsibilities, as we talked about a lot on the podcast this time a year ago. This year, you've got six new coaches. You're bringing back Sal Cinceri, who's not really a new coach because he's been here before. And you have one position change as well, if you want to classify Carl Scott or Pete Golding as a position change, or both. You could call it two position changes. So for the most part, there were two or three changes a year. Then in the last 2 years, there have been nine and eight changes on staff.
I feel like Lane kind of, or maybe, not to give him credit for all the changes, but sparked a chain reaction. Like, hey, this guy leaves and is going to be a head coach. And then multiple people went with him for better roles. And it's like, you can do it too. Come here, revamp your career, and go somewhere again.
I think there's something to that. Because if you look at the staff in 2014 or 2015, they started to bring on a lot more guys who were much higher profile, not just Lane Kiffin. Mario Cristobal would be in that group. Billy Napier had been a coordinator before. And was still
Cristobal had been a head coach.
Mm-hmm. Kirby Smart was still on staff at that point, but everyone knew at that point Kirby was kind of just biding his time to become a head coach. So you had some guys that were kind of on their way up, or you knew were going to become head coaches at some point. And now pretty much all of them are head coaches. If you go back and you look at that staff, it's pretty remarkable how many head coaches they have who were on staff during 2014 and 2015, when some of this tenure really started to pick up. Let me see if I can go and look up some of them here.
Well, welcome to the University of Alabama, otherwise known as Coaching Rehab.
You had, as we mentioned, Lane Kiffin, who went on to go be a head coach. You had Billy Napier, who's a head coach. Mario Cristobal became a head coach. Kirby Smart became a head coach. Kevin Steele was a position coach, I believe, in 14, and then became a defensive coordinator. Mel Tucker was on the 15 staff and became a head coach. So, yeah, quite a lot. And then, you know, some of those guys, Burton Burns is kind of moving towards retirement at this point. He was never going to be a head coach. Bobby Williams has moved on and to Oregon as well, guys that at some point were going to be end up moving on.
But in Bobby's case, had been a head coach.
Yes, so. Yeah.
It's kind of like you have to come to Alabama before you're allowed to be a head coach now. Like, come back. Come through.
I don't know. There was some stat. I can't remember exactly what the numbers were, but I looked it up sometime in the middle of January. And, you know, if you looked at the head coaches around the Power Five schools that have ties to Saban, there's something like 12 of them. So of like the 60 or 61 major college coaching jobs, he's got ties to 20% of them or something like that. It's pretty absurd at this point. And it could still continue to grow. You'd probably assume that a young guy like Pete Golding is going to end up being a head coach at some point. I don't think it's impossible that Steve Sarkisian could end up being a college coach again at some point. He might not be the most likely. Some schools would probably have some concerns about him, but he's a guy who's had some success at that level and might get another opportunity at some point. Other guys who are still very young, you know, Carl Scott was on his way to being a defensive coordinator at Texas Tech, or no, at Louisiana for Billy Napier,
right,
before he came here. So there are still some younger guys who are kind of working their way up on the staff. By the time it's all said and done, you know, Nick Saban could have 20 head coaches in the FBS, especially when you take into account guys like Lane Kiffin and Jim McElwain, who are head coaches, just not in major programs at this point.
I feel like Butch's agent, but Butch could end up being a head coach.
He could, yeah.
Also,
Butch is paying Cecil royalties for this podcast.
He should.
I stand with Butch Jones.
This podcast has been brought to you by Butch Jones Crew Cut. Coach Bryant had 41 former assistants over the course of his career, yeah, which is a long career, obviously.
Not all at one time, obviously.
No, but he had the majority, or at least 50% of the SEC at one time.
Mm.
or another. The jobs were now some of those had been with him at Kentucky, like Paul Dietzel, who later became the coach at Army and at LSU. He was on the staff at Kentucky.
Or
Schnellenberger.
Yeah, I was going to say Howard Schnellenberger.
Yeah, Schnellenberger. Yeah. But Pat Dye, Jackie Sherrill, Steve Sloan, Charlie Pell, almost every SEC school had a Coach Bryant disciple at one time or another.
Yeah.
When y'all mention all these SEC coaches coming from Alabama, I think of how Aaron Suttles tweets, Secret Elephant Club, how it stands for that.
Secret Elephant Club, yeah. SEC.
And then there's Clemson, which I don't know the last time Clemson had a coach that didn't have some ties to Alabama, because even Tommy Bowden was wide receivers coach here.
Alabama 2.0.
With Bill Curry and Danny Ford and, of course, Dabo and Frank Howard and Hootie Ingram and on and on. So there's been a direct pipeline to Clemson for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You just saying the word Curry made me hungry.
Sorry.
Okay. This last one, we talked about it before we started recording. This is Cecil's observation. I'm going to let you take it away then, Cecil.
Well, it does at least portend a change in how Alabama's recruiting base is going to be structured. Because with Mike Locksley on the staff, I think they'll continue to recruit in the Northeast and specifically in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area. I'm actually intrigued to see in that New Jersey, Pennsylvania area, again, setting aside what happened at the end of his career. But Kyle Flood had a very good reputation as a recruiter at Rutgers.
Mm-hmm. Again, and, kind of relative to the school he was at. Yeah.
Relative to the school he was at, but has connections in New Jersey and Pennsylvania that I'm sure that they'll continue. You know, they've recruited New Jersey, and I'm sure they'll continue to do that to some extent, but I don't know that they can be as effective in D.C., because Mike Locksley is not here, and B, because he's there.
Right.
You know, he's recruiting those kids. Yeah. And then for the most part, not 100%, but for the most part, the West Coast players that they've gotten have been connected with Tosh, Lupoy, in one way or another. So I'll be interested to see if there is heavily into California and Hawaii and Utah, as they've been.
Yeah, particularly even if they do continue to recruit some guys in California, I think it's worth noting that really recruiting in California for Tosh Lupoy is kind of a different deal than recruiting in California would be for Steve Sarkisian. Because recruiting in Northern California, you know, that's 6-8 hours away from Southern California, where Steve Sarkisian kind of made his bones. They're really different recruiting territories. They're the same state, but they're so disparate that it would be difficult to imagine them kind of continuing to have success in the Sacramento Bay Area type of place like they did under Tosh.
They'll continue. They're going to go everywhere.
Yeah, but Alabama still has the pull to go into whatever school they want and see a 5-star kid and say, if you're interested, we want you.
But they have added several new coaches, two from Mississippi State's staff, who obviously their connections would be with Mississippi. They have a new wide receiver coach who, although he came from Virginia Tech, his real reputation as a recruiter was at Memphis. And then Charles Kelly, who's been in the Florida-Georgia area, really. He was at Tennessee last year, but even then was recruiting Georgia and Florida for Tennessee. And so more guys with more of a Southern background anyway. And not that Alabama hadn't recruited the South, but they've been national and been in the West Coast, been heavily in D.C., and so it's going to be interesting to see if that changes somewhat.
Yeah, Salison's area, I believe, he had his 3 years with the Oakland Raiders where he obviously wasn't recruiting anybody. But outside of that, he was at Florida last year, had been at Florida State for a few years.
Been here.
Yeah, been at Alabama. Been at another Alabama. Kind of Southeast guy. Been at Tennessee for 1 year. Most of their new additions, really, are guys whose territory is around here, which – you know, it could be interesting. It could create some more head-to-head battles, perhaps with Kirby Smart, whether that's in Georgia, whether that's in Tennessee, whether that's for Mississippi Junior College kids. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, they were in Mississippi this past recruiting year pretty heavily.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get all the guys over there probably that they wanted or were in a final three with, but got a couple. You know, Byron Young is a big signee. Brandon Turnage from Oxford.
So they've never batted 1,000 over there in Mississippi, but they've gotten their share. You know, Raekwon Davis is a guy that they got out of there.
Nigel Knott.
Yeah.
From Mississippi.
Scott Lashley. You know, and guys like Nigel Knott and Scott Lashley are not big pieces necessarily for Alabama on the field. But those are guys that were really highly recruited and could have gone to Ole Miss or Mississippi State and chose to come to Alabama. Those were recruiting wins at that point. So Scott Lashley probably would have been a starting offensive tackle at Mississippi State last year, based watching their offensive line. You know, he was a second stringer at Alabama. I think he would have been a starter for them at one of the tackle positions.
But it will be interesting to see if they more have they again. They've been in Mississippi. They've been in Louisiana. But it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah. Anything else?
I had my point.
Yeah. What's yours?
How everyone freaked out that there are so many changes, but there's actually less than last year.
That's true. There's one fewer than last year, although the total number of new coaches, like we said, is 6 overall. If we're not counting Sal Cenceri as being a quote-unquote new coach, then you have 6 new coaches each year, although last year you were always going to have one more with the addition of the 10th assistant. So,
but still.
Yeah. I do think it'll be interesting to see, and there's no way of knowing this perhaps until the contracts come out, which is why I don't have it as one of my 5 points or 5 takeaways. I will be curious to see if there's any change in the contracts for these guys that incentivizes them to stay longer. Or just makes it more difficult for them to leave if they have more of a buyout, if they have a higher salary. You know, Alabama has never been not competitive with its assistant coaching salaries, but if they go from being the 3rd or 4th highest paid staff in the nation to being the highest paid staff in the nation, I'd be curious to see if that's a possibility.
Who was the highest paid staff last year?
Georgia.
Yeah. Clemson is up there, and LSU is up there as well. Yeah. So if I had to guess, I would say that Steve Sarkisian will probably have the highest salary of any coach on staff this coming year.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are million-dollar coordinators out there and up.
Tosh LePoy made $1.1 last year, so I would assume that Pete Golding would probably be in line for $1 million this year as well.
Somebody just signed for $1.6, I think. I'm trying to remember if it was at Oklahoma or where it was.
Was it perhaps Todd Grantham at Florida?
Might have been, because the Bengals were looking at him.
Yeah, Dave Aranda at LSU might be a $2 million or something similar. Yeah.
That hurts my heart.
Yeah. And you know, I don't report on LSU, so I'm not saying that this was based on my information. Based on some friends of mine who have covered LSU, I was told that Texas A&M came after Dave Aranda pretty hard. And perhaps offered him more money than what LSU is paying this year, but he wanted to stay at LSU, and so was willing to take a lesser deal for whatever he's making, whether it's $2 million or $1.7 or $1.5.
God forbid.
Compared with what Texas A&M might have offered him. So,
yeah, I think Venables is making close to that, too.
Yeah.
Clemson.
Yeah. The thing about that, obviously, and we're not breaking any new ground by telling you guys this, is that if you're making $1.2 or $1.4 or $1.6 million to be a coordinator, then you have every bit of the salary that you would have if you were head coach at Troy or UAB at a school like that level or South Alabama. But you don't have to deal with all the responsibilities. You don't have all the attention. You can kind of wait and take a head coaching job at a different level, kind of like what Mel Tucker might have done when he went to Colorado this year. You know, Georgia's not going to pay its defensive coordinator more than Colorado pays its head coach, but Georgia's going to pay its defensive coordinator more than Georgia State or Georgia Southern would pay its head coach. So
every time you said one of those numbers, my heart clenched in pain.
Yeah.
I should have taken up coaching.
You think about it.
I took coaching football in college.
You think about it. And the assistant coaches that we cover make, you know, just to give it a ballpark figure, I don't know what your all salaries are either. So, but it's, if assistant coaches out there are making between $400,000 and $800,000, they're making in the ballpark of 10 times what we're making. You know, if Nick Saban's making $7.5 million, it's not crazy to say that he might be making 100 times what some of us are making, or what some of the normal folks who listen to this are making, you know?
Wait, how much does Butch Jones make?
He probably makes the $30,000.
He probably makes the $30,000 here, but he's getting
the Tennessee money is
here from
So I gotta
Tennessee.
Like go get a head coaching job, get fired, and then just casually get money. Got
that's
it.
That's all it takes.
Got it.
Yeah.
Coach Bryant made $150,000 a year.
Yeah.
Aww.
He did okay. You don't have to worry about Coach Bryant.
Golden Flake and Coca Cola. Right.
He did have some outside sources. So. But yeah, his salary was $150,000 a year.
Yeah,
he wouldn't take a higher salary than the president of the university. Which,
good for him.
I respect.
Isn't the way it works anymore.
No, it's not. All right, I think we're probably due for a basketball podcast later this week. So make sure you guys check back and listen to that. It's also been a little while since we've asked you guys to subscribe to the podcast or leave us some reviews.
Do it.
Yes, please do. I think we've got something like 41 or 42 reviews on iTunes right now. If we can get to 50 by the end of this week, I'd be really excited.
I'm going to drop a DM in my sorority group.
I was covering the basketball game Saturday, and a gentleman from New York stopped by and said to relay that he listens to every podcast in New York City.
We do get
to Ty Sliders and Co. and Fida.
We do get really good feedback on the podcast. And the reason why we ask you guys to leave reviews or to leave us ratings is because that helps other people find the podcast, which helps it grow further. So we're glad that you guys enjoy it. We want other people to enjoy it as well, and we want to continue doing this for you all. So we'll continue doing it for you all later this week. Check back later.
Thanks.
All right.